You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. We are disrupting aging one show at a time. All our episodes are available anytime on demand at WPTF.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm your host, Mike Olander of AARP North Carolina. We've got a great show for you today, folks. Colin Campbell, Capital Bureau Chief of WUNC, is with us to talk about being a Statehouse reporter, the changing media environment, and, of course, North Carolina politics. But before we get to Colin, ladies and gentlemen, normally at this point in the program, we indulge in a little informal banter with the producer and engineer of AARP Without Limits, Jason Kong. However, if you tuned into the last program, you'll know that that was Jason's last show with us. And so today, ladies and gentlemen, I am very pleased to introduce to the program our new engineer and producer of AARP Without Limits, Mr. Mike Davis. Mike, how are you, sir?
Well, at least you're pleased so far. We'll see how it goes.
So far. Wow, that radio voice, my friend. Wow.
Well, you sound pretty good yourself. I was just listening to it. I said, oh, this guy's made for this. I like this.
So?
Yeah, I think so, Mike. I think you're a natural.
I don't think so. You're the natural. I've got good hair. Like, I know what I'm good at. I've got some.
Oh,
pretty,
you would bring up hair.
I've got some.
Now, come on.
I don't have the. If I could trade the hair for a Barry White voice, Mike.
Look,
I'd do it.
You're on. We'll figure something out. Because if I can have your hair, we've got a deal.
All right, we're off to a good start here.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I gotta learn a little bit about you myself,
sure.
Not just our listening audience here, but tell us a bit about who you are, how you got started in radio, how long you've been here.
Wow. Let's see. I'll make this succinct, but I actually got started when I was in high school, East Wake High School in Wendell. My first radio job was I did a promo for a play I was in. I was in Dracula.
Wow.
And I went to the local radio station there in town and did a promo in the voice of Dracula, blah, blah, you know, that thing. That was so campy, so corny, and so much fun, and I was hooked. And then I got involved in doing news for another station here in town. I would literally take stories from the newspaper and sort of rewrite them and call them in on the phone, and they would record them and put them on the air. So I did that for a little while. And then went to college, got my degree in communication, and from there I've had an opportunity to broadcast. Here's my claim to fame, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
My voice has been heard on 6 of the 7 continents.
Wow.
So that's it. That's all I got. That's it. That's it. But having a blast. Love radios. So I've been in it a long, long time. And by the way, I am officially old enough to be an AARP member. So I'll just say that. And there we go. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for letting me be a part of the show. I'm looking forward to working with you.
I'm really looking forward to getting to work with you too, Mike, and getting to know you as well. You've been in this a long time, and getting to learn from you. And that's one of the things. Again, shout out to Jason Kong. In the 2+ years of doing this AARP Without Limits with him, I learned a lot about him or from him, and I'm looking forward to learning from you too, Mike. A couple other quick questions, if
sure,
you don't mind.
Sure.
I mentioned earlier before we were on the mic, you've got a wife, family, anything you can tell us?
I have 4 kids. My wife has 5. So, you know, between us, we've done the kid thing.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are out of the house. Her family is from the Midwest. And in the Midwest, my kids and grandkids all live here in the Raleigh area.
Wow, excellent. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's got to make for some fun holidays.
Absolutely.
Or some interesting holidays, perhaps, sometimes.
Both.
Okay. That's good. You know, on my side, I'm actually really excited because this week I'm the baby of 5 kids,
oh,
and they're
wow.
all up and down the East Coast.
Oh, cool.
But now, as folks are getting older and their kids are getting married and settling here in North Carolina, my oldest sister, this week, her and her husband are in Raleigh this week house hunting.
Fantastic.
Because they want to be near their grandkids.
Where are they moving from?
They're moving from Wall, New Jersey. So okay. Jersey Shore. They've been there, you know, they've lived there forever.
Yeah.
In that part of the state. And they lived in that house for 26 years. And they're moving here. And then so my other sister's going, hey, I want to be there too. And then one of my brothers is already here in Wake Forest. So four out of five of us, boom, in the next couple of years. Boy. We're going to have some great Thanksgivings and Christmases and all that other great stuff.
Well, tell them I said, welcome to North Carolina.
You very well may get to say that in person. I'm sure they'll want to
I would
see
love that.
The magic behind the curtain here at some point.
I would welcome that.
Great. Well, let's get on to our program today, Mike. Like you, I'm really interested in learning from our guest. I've always been intrigued with people who do journalism. I think it is a very misunderstood profession for sure. And I think in particular, those who cover politics and statehouse politics have got a really exciting job just because of the environment, and especially here in North Carolina, always interesting stuff going on in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Very interesting politics in the state. You know, we've had blue governors and bright red state legislatures for recent years. And I think covering all the news that comes out of that environment has just got to be a challenge and a joy every single day. And so to talk about this, we've got with us Colin Campbell, who, as I mentioned before, is the Capitol Bureau Chief of WNC. He has covered North Carolina politics and state government since 2014. Starting as a reporter for the News and Observer in Raleigh, he later led the North Carolina Insider State Government News Service before moving to Business North Carolina Magazine to launch its daily political newsletter, the North Carolina Tribune. Colin, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, great to be here.
Did I get all that background accurate
enough?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we bounce around between different news outlets in the Capitol Press Corps, but we all seem to be stuck on covering state politics. Because it's just so fascinating that it's hard to escape.
Great. Well, I'm glad you think it's fascinating. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it. First off, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you on. Just a quick question. Let's start with the question everyone's wondering now that we have, you know, a new governor, a new leadership in the state legislature. What's the vibe like now, and what are you expecting during this state legislative session?
Yeah, so we seem like we've got you know, fairly good relations so far. We're in this sort of honeymoon period for new leadership with the new House Speaker, Destin Hall, who's taking over for Tim Moore, who had that position for about a decade before being elected to Congress last year. Senate Leader Phil Berger is still in place. He's been over there for over a decade, so definitely sort of the power center and the institutional longest serving person there. But then we've got obviously new Democratic Governor Josh Stein in office. The relationship between the legislature and former Governor Roy Cooper over the course of his 8 years kind of soured over time. There's a lot more contention towards the end over things like disaster relief and various other sort of policy things. Mm-hmm. With Stein, he's taking a more conciliatory approach, at least to start with the legislature. They seem to be a little more willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on things that they think they could potentially work together on. Whether that stays the case throughout this year, I think remains to be seen as we get into budget fights and, you know, policy issues that get very partisan. I would expect that you're going to see a lot more contention among the parties. But so far, things have been off to a, you know, not too rocky start there. It's been smooth sailing so far. But, you know, we're only a couple months into the year at this point. So there's plenty of time for people to make enemies.
To dig a little bit deeper in this, you mentioned how things are pretty comfortable right now, at least, you know, in this honeymoon period between Stein and the state legislature. Do you think that the recovery of Hurricane Helene has got to anything to do with that? That's sort of all hands on deck, we're all in this together. Is that a factor or no?
I think that does factor in. I mean, if you look at what they've done in the first weeks of session, Helene recovery has been the big ticket item. It's probably going to be the first major bill that goes to the governor's desk this year with essentially $500 million in state spending to try to help the recovery process out in western North Carolina. And that's something that Democrats and Republicans all agree needs to be done. There's a few differences in you know, exactly how much do you spend, exactly what sorts of programs do you fund. But by and large, a lot of the stuff that the governor asked for is in the bill that's moving through the legislature. The House and Senate seem to be fairly close on exactly what the details look like and how much to be spent. So I think that sort of sense of purpose, you know, when you're looking at the devastation that occurred out west in this state, you start to realize some of these petty partisan squabbles aren't that important when you've got people who are losing their homes and their businesses and communities that, you know, will really struggle for years to get back on their feet. And I think that sort of helps people focus on kind of the impactful stuff as opposed to a lot of the culture war issues and other things that you see sort of percolate up in politics.
That is refreshing to hear that that's what your take on it is, because I think that's what people hope would happen, right, is that people would put away these other issues aren't important or don't have their time and space in the debate. But, you know, first things first, let's get this huge chunk of North Carolina back on the road to recovery. Real quick, aside from Hurricane Helene, do you have any expectations or predictions about major pieces of legislation moving forward this year?
I mean, I think the budget's always the big one, and we're looking at potentially tighter revenue pictures, so that may impact what the state can spend money on in terms of state employee raises, retiree pensions, things like that. And then I think we could see a lot on healthcare this year. The affordability crisis, particularly in North Carolina, is something that both parties realize they need to get at. And so I think we'll see multiple bills come through trying to address the extremely high cost of healthcare in North Carolina.
Right. Well, time will tell. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, folks, we're going to continue our conversation with Colin Campbell. This is AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back.
AARP is working hard to make sure people in North Carolina are getting the most out of life. Whether it's helping you stay healthy, save more money, care for loved ones, or simply have some fun, AARP is making a difference in communities across the state. You have a wise friend and fierce defender with AARP. Learn more about progress being made for older adults in the state by listening to AARP Without Limits. You can find the latest episodes of AARP Without Limits wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, that we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, or a recommendation for a future topic or guest, please send me an email, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. We've been speaking today with Colin Campbell. He's the Capital Bureau Chief of WUNC. We've been talking about sort of the his take as a State House reporter of what's going on in the state legislature, the dynamics that we are seeing here in the state, both with respect to the governor and the state legislature. But Colin, I want to take a step back. Media is a topic of discussion in the media right now. When it comes to the media, politics certainly have stoked a lot of public distrust in media and journalism. That seems especially true when it comes to the legacy media and national politics. Is that sentiment the same at the state and local level, in your opinion?
You know, I think we get a little bit of that at the state level and local level. A lot of people sort of take their general views about the media that's typically formed around when they turn on the TV and they're seeing the, you know, yelling talking heads doing opinion work on cable news and sort of extrapolating that out to think that that's the media as a whole. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a lot of trust, more trust in local media because we are closer to people. We are covering the issues that, you know, affect people's day-to-day lives, oftentimes that aren't necessarily partisan. You don't have quite as much highly opinionated content in local media, whether it's TV, radio, or newspapers, as you do in national media. But I think a lot of us sort of suffer reputationally because of sort of the sins of media at the national level as far as sort of really promoting, you know, hyper-partisan opinion content over, you know, fact-based, you know, at least attempting to be objective journalism, which you see a lot more of at the state and local level. But the challenge for us, I think, even more so than just the trust issue, is breaking through the noise of getting people to pay attention to state and local news stories as opposed to constantly filling their brains with whatever's happening in Washington, D.C., which is important, but oftentimes not as impactful on your daily lives as what's happening in the legislature, at your city council, county commission, school board, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad you ended on that note, because I always suspected that, you know, we always hear all politics is local. And one of the things we like to say at AARP is that real life happens in the community. You know, you hear about all this, like, for example, the aging of America and how are we going to deal with the challenges of Medicare and Social Security and things like that. Well, we at AARP say, yeah, that's a big kind of Washington picture, the 35,000 foot view of it, right? But real life happens in the communities and in neighborhoods. And so our work in that area is to make, you know, how do communities and how do our state prepare for the aging population? And so I imagine when it comes to paying attention to local media, I wonder if people instinctively understand that this is different than the national media because this is real life is happening as opposed to, you know, that Washington Beltway culture, right?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the challenge really with social media and stuff that just sort of sucks all the energy out of the discussion. And a lot of times people aren't paying as close enough attention as they should be. And one of the goals I have in covering the legislature is try to sort out the sort of the messaging bills where people are trying to sort of localize a national issue on immigration or DEI or something like that and things that actually have a tangible effect, a bill that helps people save for retirement or, you know, something that impacts healthcare policy that determines whether someone's going to get the service or coverage that they need to, you know, help themselves. Those are the sort of things that I think media should be more focused on as much as we can, and it's a lot easier to do that at the state and local level.
Another follow-up on that, are there any unique challenges for you working for public radio, you know, WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio, as opposed to the corporate mainstream media?
You know, I think there's advantages to it. One of the things, you know, people talk about media bias. One of the biases I see probably more prevalent than anything is a bias towards negativity and conflict. And a lot of that is based, particularly on the for-profit side, on using metrics around radio ratings, TV ratings, the number of clicks you get to your website. Those things draw eyeballs, and that's why media kind of gravitates towards them. The nice thing about being in public broadcasting is most of our funding comes from listeners, and they tell us what they want, and what they want is, you know, more fact-based, not as, you know, sensationalized or kind of that kind of journalism. So that allows us to do a little bit more of that. Certainly, we have some challenges in terms of funding at the federal level. There's definitely been an attempt to sort of position to make claims about NPR programming as too left-leaning, and certainly, you know, there's legitimate critiques of any news outlet and how well they do with their strive towards objectivity. But I think that will hurts us a little bit, but at the same time, not having to sort of worry about some of the commercial factors in what you cover and how you cover it, I think makes a big difference in what we can do.
Looking at the national environment again for a second, the new Trump administration is taking a very unique approach to how it interacts with the press. Podcasters and bloggers are now getting access and a lot of attention. Is this attempt at parody something truly new, or has this existed in other ways before in the past that you're aware of?
I think we've seen a trend towards this over time. Certainly Democrats have been just as eager to sort of appear on a celebrities podcast type situation as much as Republicans. We're seeing it accelerated, I think, in the Trump White House, where some of those, you know, primo seats in the White House briefing room are going to podcasters,
right,
or
yeah,
ideological outlets. And there's definitely concerns with that because you're not necessarily going to get the same level of scrutiny, particularly if a politician is putting media figures who very much support their line of thinking and are going to ask softball questions in these seats of people who get to be the ones to directly question the president or his top staff. I think that's a point of concern. At the same time, I mean, anybody who has a large audience is probably worth a politician's time to sort of reach people who maybe they don't consume sort of traditional media sources, but they're getting their news from a podcaster or a, you know, Instagram influencer of some kind. Mm-hmm. And there's value to that. But I think I like it when I see politicians sort of making themselves as accessible as possible across all fronts. And there's definitely value to traditional media in asking the tough questions and really trying to, you know, hold politicians accountable.
Yeah, that's great. Would you expect, as being a State House reporter, would you be surprised if this started appearing more in State House reporting?
Potentially. I think it's a little bit harder to do at the State House level because there's just fewer of these kind of, you know, external podcaster, you know, local celebrities that would have an interest in sort of covering politics in that kind of a format that you see at the national level. But certainly, I mean, one of the things we grapple with in the Capitol Press Corps is sort of when new media outlets form and maybe they're a little bit partisan or a little bit ideological, where is the line for do you get press credentials? Do you get to come to the press conferences, go on the House and Senate floor? And that's always a challenge because sort of the changing face of media, it's hard to know exactly where do you draw the line? What are the definitions? Because it's very easy to say a newspaper that's nonpartisan should have press credentials. But what about, you know, somebody who's working for an advocacy group or a podcaster with a strong opinion? You know, what is media? What is a journalist these days? It's a squishy question.
So until the day that ARP Without Limits becomes attains celebrity status, I don't think we're going to be. We're not reporters, folks, just to be clear here. Not a reporter at all. Always just interested in good discussion and getting perspective on things that people are interested in, particularly with ARP Without Limits. Obviously, we have an older audience, and so these are the types of things that folks are interested in. Got to ask you about AI. Colin, AI is doing a lot of our work for us these days. Journalism, I hear, is no exception. Last year at one of Joe Stewart's Thinkers Luncheons, I see you there from time to time, a reporter made a joke about how in the next few years he doesn't expect to have a job as a journalist anymore, and he wasn't really joking about it. What's your take on AI playing a role in journalism?
I think it could be a useful tool. I mean, I use some degree of AI almost every day for a transcription service. So if I'm listening to a committee hearing, I'll use an AI bot that transcribes it for me. It's not a very good transcription, but it does allow me to sort of identify the quotes and themes from the meeting. And then I go back and, as a human, have to listen to it myself to make sure I'm, you know, presenting it accurately. And so that's sort of good AI. I think it can easily get out of hand from a journalistic standpoint because you have to have the sort of human quality control. If you're relying on a bot to tell you what happened in a government meeting or what's in a piece of legislation, there's going to be mistakes. So I think, you know, people need to tread cautiously. And I think the trust that media develops, a lot of it's based on sort of those human interactions. You have radio hosts that you trust, journalists who you organizations that you've learned to accept for accuracy and having those voices explaining something. I think it's really hard for AI to replace that. So my hope is there'll always be a role for journalists, but there may be some tools that come along that make our jobs easier and help us synthesize the huge amount of information that we deal with on a daily basis.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say that because I think for a lot of people, especially, you know, older Americans, they're overwhelmed by AI, all these changes, and it's so easy to get confused and to almost not even want to know anything about it, right? Because it's so overwhelming and such a departure from what their life has been to this point. And they're thinking AI, you know, you think about in journalism, you think, wow, I'm reading stories in my paper about how somebody was developing an AI and it turned against them and was like trying to convince them to kill themselves, right? I mean, there have been stories like that, which is kind of nuts. But I think what it's important for people to understand, as you said, that these can be tools that can be used that just make your job a little bit easier, allow you to spend some time maybe on other stories that require more traditional journalism, right? The hard work, making the phone calls, talking to people that AI can't get to, right? And providing some quality journalism. In your opinion, one more question here, Colin. What does the future of State House reporting look like to you? And do you have any hopes and concerns about it?
You know, I think State House reporting will be pretty strong in the future. People recognize that there's a need for that sort of coverage. In some extent, we're better resourced than like local government reporting. There's fewer reporters at a city council meeting or a county commission. I think over time, there'll be fewer large outlets and more variety of outlets that are covering specific topics like healthcare or education. So for a news consumer, I think the big challenge in the long run is where are you getting your news and, you know, how many websites or media outlets do you need to check in with to really fully be informed about state government? I think that can be a challenge going forward. There's so many different organizations and startups and things like that trying to cover state government, and hopefully there'll still be a large number of us sitting in that little basement press room down in downtown Raleigh.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hope so. Okay, here's your opportunity for a little shameless self-promotion here. How can people read what you write, listen to what you have to say, follow you on social media?
Yeah, you can catch WUNC on the radio in the Triangle and Triad area at 90.7. 91.5 FM. Our website is wunc.org, where we've got lots of articles, and it's also where you can sign up for our weekly WUNC Politics newsletter, which I write, that comes out every Friday.
Great. Excellent. Well, Colin, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it, and hope to have you back sometime later on, perhaps after the state legislative session, to see how things turned out.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great. My pleasure. Well, that is a wrap, folks. Again, please feel free to email us your questions and comments, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. I want to thank Colin Campbell for being our guest. I want to say thank you, Mike Davis. Great first show with us here, working the engineer board and your work in post-production. Thank you for listening. This has been AARP Without Limits. I'm Mike Olander of AARP North Carolina. We'll see you next time.